Welcome to the opening episode of the Top Lot podcast, co-hosted by myself, Ash White, and I'm delighted to be joined with my colleague, Mikey Roy.
Hi everyone, thanks for joining us. Ash and I both work for the Race Post Bloodstock commercial team, and this is going to be your go-to podcast for all the latest news and views from around the world of Bloodstock.
Coming up on this episode, we will be joined by two highly esteemed guests. We will be taking some questions from you guys, the listeners, sent in to us on Twitter. We will also have Richard Pugh of Tattersall's Cheltenham tuning in to preview the Cheltenham sale, and we'll be previewing a couple of the big festival races from a Bloodstock angle. So, without wasting any more time, we are delighted to be joined now by legendary former trainer, successful author, and Bloodstock extraordinaire Henrietta Knight, and alongside her, former amateur jockey, and now one of the biggest Bloodstock agents in National Hunt Racing, Tom Malone. Welcome, guys. How are you both?
Very good, thank you. Good to be here.
Got here finally.
Good. Contract coronavirus on your way, are you good?
Well, we won't know about that for another 48 hours, but I'm hoping, like Cheltenham, we'll get away with it.
Good. And you, Hen, all okay?
All good.
Good.
So, obviously, Cheltenham's around the corner, biggest time of the year. Hen, this has got to bring back some pretty incredible memories for you. Trained best mate to win the Gold Cup 3 years in a row. Do you still get as excited as you ever did?
Well, Cheltenham is unbelievable because it gets everybody excited. And it has such an electric atmosphere. This is the mecca of steeplechase, and it is the one week of the year that everybody lives for.
And Tom, do you have a favourite Cheltenham memory?
The first one, Brindisi Breeze winning the Albert Bartlett.
What year was that? 1980?
Not quite back that far now. Steady on. I wasn't even born in 80, well, that'll tell you. It was about 10 years ago. Lucinda Russell, and it was her first Cheltenham winner, and he was a tough, tough horse, he was. My God, he could have been very, very good.
So, Tom, can you just tell us a little bit about sort of what you do day to day, and obviously you're buying horses, but what else do you do?
Well, I suppose people always ask that question, what do you do when you're not at a sale? Well, I'd love them to come and work with me for a week. They don't just arrive at sales. You've got to go and put the legwork in. I mean, in January, Hen has done it. I have done it. I've seen 300 four-year-olds in January in the process of running through February, March, April and May. And the reason I do that, and the reason Hen would do it, or any of us would do it, is that the legwork is done. Once the horse has done his job, you've already seen him, you've had notes, you either like him or you don't, and it's performance-based then. And you don't have to get on a plane every Monday morning to be disappointed or excited. You already know. You can just be a couple of steps ahead and you can make a decision quicker. And you've had time to do all of your pedigree research, all of your own research. So that's basically what we do day to day.
Excellent. And you have your own point-to-point yard?
I have a yard that I buy and sell horses through. We have a few point-to-pointers for a bit of fun. But the main job is the only job, really. You know, I'm a carer of horses, not a trainer. I have one for Johnny Delahaye that Paul asked, could he send to me? And I class myself as the carer of his horse, not the trainer.
And then on the other side of the coin, you are a former trainer and now heavily involved in Bloodstock. Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing?
Well, I've always been fascinated by Bloodstock and the breeding and the performance of the young horses. But also I'm fascinated in jumping horses. And that's what I do mostly at home now. We have a yard full of horses for other trainers that come to us to do specialised jumping, either horses that have had mishaps in races or horses that are starting from scratch. And it's great.
What's it like having a horse that's unraced, either coming up from the coming off the flat, so hasn't gone over jumps yet, or buying a horse to go over jumps? What's it like the first time they come through your doors and you're getting them started off to get them jumping?
Well, basically every horse is treated the same. And we start the horses off the flat over little poles and a loose jumping ring. Very quickly you can work out whether it's going to be a good jumper or not. And that's part of the excitement, following them through. And the bigger horses, some of them have jumped before. If they're French horses, a lot of them have been broken in and jumped as two-year-olds. And if I get them when they're three or four, they probably know more than I'm going to teach them.
Is it quite hard to reverse? Have they got any bad habits, haven't they? Is it almost more difficult to try and correct something like that?
Some of the jumpers, the National Hunt bred horses, have got a few bad habits, probably because of the way they've been ridden. As my late husband, Terry Biddlecombe, used to say, it's the jockeys that do the damage.
I think that's so true, because I ride out every day, and horses are coming in and out of my yard the same as they are yours. And, you know, there's riding a horse and sitting on a horse. They're two completely different things. I get horses that have been ran in point to points, and they arrive in my yard, and I promise you now, they don't know how to gallop. They don't know how to breathe because they've never been ridden properly. They're just sat on up a hill or do this or do that. It's completely different. And someone good that breaks a horse, you will always tell that horse throughout its life, won't you?
Absolutely.
They have a mouth. You can steer them. You can ride them for a start. And the ones I've won in the yard at the minute, honest to God, he is horrible to ride.
Right.
Because all he's been ever asked to do is to go forward.
Yeah.
Not taught to, actually, that's not how it should be done. It should be done like this.
As you would probably agree, Tom, so many of those horses in Ireland, the ones that you and I go over and see, the four-year-olds, they are being prepared to run as four-year-olds. And all they have in their mind is to run and gallop and jump. But they haven't had the basics. And when they come to England, when they're sold to England, a lot of them have to be put back to square one and started again, so that they learn sort of how to balance themselves, how to be steered, and just how to be in a pack with other horses.
So is that, there's obviously recently, both of you actually have been involved in buying some quite expensive pointers. Are there things that you look for which would be big turnoffs, and what do you look for to, how do you know when you really want to go after one?
Well, let's just back up a step here now, because everyone goes on about the price of a horse now, all right? The whole industry has risen from the price of a foal to the price of a three-year-old to the price now of a point-to-point winner. And if you look at the results, the most widely accessible horse now is a point-to-pointer, because they are averaging 50, 60 grand stores. They're not normal horses anymore. Lads used to go 25, 30 years ago and spend 7 or 8 grand on a store, bring it point-to-point, and one in every 20 or 30 might turn out to be a nice horse, and one in 100 was a good horse. Now you have a massive chance from the point of points of getting good horses. It's proven.
And is that because, has the training got better, or is...
The horses are better.
The horses, yeah. The quality of the horse.
Yeah.
And they are horses' potential future champions.
Yeah.
So does that put you off going to the store sales, or do you still go and you just try and get a bargain, but you just won't go to a certain price?
Absolutely not. I will buy, you want to put it as a deer store, one that's going to be outside the bracket of the pinhookers, that one, I'll go there. But like Hen, and I will have seen them all. So if there's, you can't buy them all, but you pinpoint one, if he makes 100 grand or whatever as a store, great, you buy him. There's another one you really like, made 50, but you know where he's gone. So straight away you have in your head, he's gone to Sean Doyle, or he's gone to Colin Bow or Dennis Murphy. Mm-hmm. You have it in your head, I'm going to see him again in January. I'll have a chance to buy him in 8 months' time again if he's any good.
Yeah.
Don't be worrying about it. We'll come back for him.
Yeah.
And that is how the system has evolved now.
And is there a constant dialogue between trainers of point-to-pointers and people like yourself who are going to go and potentially buy those horses?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. You have to speak to them.
Yeah.
We all work together.
Yeah.
They don't want to sell it.
That's what people don't realise.
They don't want to sell a bad one. I mean, their business is hinged on the owner being happy, the trainer being happy, me being happy, Hen being happy, and them being happy.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be scenarios when it doesn't happen. But what really bugs me, and the industry should be trying to promote it, is that don't be making such a big thing about the prices of the horses. For me, it's not about that. Find something beautiful about that horse, its pedigree. Every horse that runs now, and he cost X in the sales, and someone saying that, they actually haven't got it right. He was bought privately since that. Yeah, that's the store price. You know, so when I hear these things, I can spot them straight away.
Yeah.
And I think the industry should get behind it, that people are spending lots of money on horses, trying their best. Everyone's trying their best to find the fastest horse.
So can you tell us a bit about Envoy Allen and how that came about?
Well, it was easy. My daughter could have told me to buy him. That wasn't a difficult thing. I was after buying a horse called Danny Kerwin, and Pat Doyle, who trained him, he said, I bought his brother on the strength of this horse last year, and I think he'll win his four-year-old maiden in Ballinabula. He said he runs in 3 weeks' time. I was there 3 weeks later to try and buy him. It was a six-runner maiden, and every one of them in the paddock were beautiful. And I thought, oh, now we're on to something. This is a good race. They crawled for 1.25 miles, which then I thought, well, this is going to be a bit of a mess of a race. And Pat's horse quickened along, and another horse just arrived upside him and just spat him out and quickened. and that was on Violin. And I left Appreciated behind. It was in the same race. Right. Danny Corbin's brother. But decided, well, I found one that's better. We'll go and we'll buy him.
Yeah.
And that's how it worked out. It wasn't, you know, you say this as well, Han, when you're standing in the field, your first impression's always right. It is. Mm. This thing just blew them away.
Yeah.
In strides, he was gone. You can't do that. You just can't do that unless you're top class. Did I know he was MVLN? No, but he looked a hellish exciting young horse.
And so, Hen, on that note, you recently bought a horse called Galley Hill. Is that right?
He was another horse that was impressive in his point-to-point. Well-made horse and well-bred horse. And just a horse that I liked.
Yeah. Can you tell us a bit about your involvement with Mike Gretsch, who's obviously got out of his partnership in buying horses and now he's doing it on his own and with your help?
Well, he's a man who particularly likes National Hunt racing. He's come back into it on his own, as you say. He was with Stuart Parkin. They've separated, going their own ways. And he invited me to buy his horses, manage his horses and organise his racing interests, something which I love doing.
Very much. And so have you had Galley Hill at home, or what's he up to at the moment?
Yeah, a bit like Tom. He came home, had him here there at home for about 2 months. Probably won't even run him this year, not till the autumn. Yeah. Big backward horse.
He was huge, wasn't he? He's a gorgeous big horse. Mm.
So obviously in the world of bloodstock, which I find quite funny, is that there's a certain number of bloodstock agents, there's a certain number of sales, and every bloodstock agent has seen every horse at a sale. So they've got to go somewhere, and you'll only get so many good horses out of one sale. So it's kind of like you'll know every horse that Hen's got and you will have seen them at the sale. Mm-hmm. And likewise, Hen will know all the horses that you've bought and seen them and have an opinion on them.
Well, the thing is that, you know, if you go to a sale, let's say there's 40 at a sale, let's just for average. Hen's not going to buy 40 horses. I'm not going to buy 40 horses. So you plumb for the horse you really like that you thought done something different, because when you look at a race, everyone looks at it differently. Hence why there's a market for betting and everyone fancies a different horse at Cheltenham. And that's the reason. You look at races completely different and you see something different. It's the very same at a sale. You pick a horse, and then when two of you pick it, that's when the market decides that horse is worth X. And that's what the market decides. If there's an underbidder to them horses, the market decided it was worth that on that given day.
And different owners want different horses. And I don't just buy for Mike Greg. It's just that he was happy to go a little bit higher than some of the others. And some of the other people I buy for have got lesser depth to their pocket. But their horses could be just as successful. The ones who are cheaper could be just as successful as the expensive ones.
And so looking ahead to Cheltenham, Tom, you will have bought a lot of horses. Can you tell us, just give us a couple that you're really excited for and looking forward to seeing?
Well, look, the Bankero of Ireland seems to be on Violin this year, so you'd have to say he's a horse that doesn't do an awful lot, and I think I love that about him. I think he can dismiss them and then look like, oh, hello, come on now, horse, get on with it, but he just does enough. And any horse that can go and win a point-to-point like he did and drop back to 2 mile and dismiss horses, and it's just the way he travels, his jumping is phenomenal. You could crab him a little bit the last day, but when he won the Royal Bond in Ferry, I was, mother of Christ, I haven't. And even Down Royal, when he won in Down Royal, to see a novice jump like that, he was like a champion hurdle. He was like a horse that had been running over hurdles all his life. That was impressive to see. So, look, he's carrying the weight of Ireland, but he's been to the festival and he's won at the festival. That's a massive plus for any horse. And he's unbeaten in his life. A few others, I suppose, Delta Work in the Gold Cup. His horse we bought from a bumper in France. Jiggenstown bottom, Eddie O'Leary bottom.
When you buy a horse from bumper in France like him, are you in your head, are you looking at that horse and going, God, one day that's going to have a real chance in the Gold Cup?
Definitely not with him. That was never the case, because he's not actually a big robust horse. He's a nice, light, racy type of horse, but he's AQPS, he's won his bumper, he's the future. You're buying them horses looking at it, like, and you would never look at him, you'd never pull him out and say, no, this is a Gold Cup horse, but his heart has got him there. He's as brave as a lion. And he jumps. And that's the key. You can, once you have heart and you jump, the rest will drag through. Well,
you don't have to have a big horse, do you, Tom?
No, you don't. No, definitely not. Like, people go on about 16-2, 16-3. That is, that it's a help, because it might make it easier. But we bought a little horse that's won 15 races called Black Corton. He's just over 16 hands.
Yeah.
That thing thinks he's jumping around the national fences when he's jumping. Oh, he's brilliant. He just wants it. So yeah, he's another horse.
And not only, and Tiger Roll's not a very big, and all the good horses have won the national that were small, like the Team Spirits and Battleship in 1938. He was a stallion and he was 15-1.
Is that right? was Red Rum big, was he?
No.
No, he didn't ever look big when he galloped his head down. Yeah.
Probably before you were born.
Yeah.
And going back to your back when you were a trainer and obviously best mate, can you tell us a bit about the characteristics of a horse like him and whether you can see the characteristics in him in any of the potential Gold Cup runners this year?
Not really, but the jumping is very important. And like Tom says, Delta Work is a very good jumper. I think Lost in Translation is a very good jumper. I think they have got to jump well to win a Gold Cup, and Clandes Oboe is a lovely jumper. Those are the horses that I would pick out for a Gold Cup.
How much do you think the pedigree has to do with it? So, like, let's take Altior, for example. Everyone wanted to see him run in a King George over 3 miles, but he's by High Chaparral, who was a flat stallion, really. Does that have a huge impact on whether a horse can get up a hill in a Gold Cup?
Well, first and foremost, if you find a horse at a sale, for me, that's the second part of the journey. Finding the horse is the first part. And if you'd seen Altior in the flesh, you wouldn't care what he was by. High Chaparral or no High Chaparral. It's a leggy, tall, athletic horse he was. And I can see why they bought him. And having studied Nicky's buying for 10 years now, he loves a sharp pedigree. He loves...
He's a typical Nicky horse, like Fred Winter.
Yeah, 100%.
Modelled himself on Fred Winter where he used to be, and they are the same type of horse.
Every time. I've seen Nicky over time have a lot of bumper winners that haven't been very good after that, but because they were sharp, pedigreed horses, they made them in, and we all love seeing a bumper winner, don't we?
Very much. And what sort of emphasis do you place on pedigree when you're buying jumps horses?
I absolutely die by it. I love it.
Okay, so would you go first and foremost by dam side, or does the stallion have more of an effect?
Look, I find the horse first, and then the rest makes me decide how much I'm going to spend on it.
Okay, so you're going by looks of the horse, confirmation, all of that stuff, and then pedigree just to back it up.
It's funny, isn't it? Laylor was at the Derby sale. He was last lot in on day one, and he was by Itchgino. Now, none of the Irish Pint to Pint boys did. What's Itchgino? They wouldn't have even heard of it. And I was buying quite a few horses in Germany at the time, and this thing had a black type dam side page, and I was thinking, oh, and this, he was 17 hands, big ear on him like that, and a head to match, and he just went, 16 grand.
Beautiful horse.
16 grand is all he cost, because no one else could make head or tail of it. Mm. But the horse was the first thing that I went, ooh, ho, ho. And then I researched everything else, it all fell into place then. And that's how I do it anyway.
There are a lot of horses by very unheard of stallions, obscure stallions. But I think that the dam's line is very, very important, and you can trace it back. And sometimes if there's like Tom says, if there's a horse by a stallion that nobody's heard of, you're at a bit of an advantage because you can pick them up cheap at the beginning.
Yeah. And so do you go by the horse, the way the horse looks before you go into the pedigree?
The horse first, and the way it walks and its conformation. Is it a racehorse or not? You think it's a racehorse, and then you go and look at the stuff on the paper.
Very good. And would you say, so let's take Penton Hills, for example, who you've been dealing with. A lot of people would say in his last run at Haydock that he got there and he should have gone and won, and he didn't stay, and he's by motivator, and he's flatbred, whereas a horse like Epitant, who's favourite for the Champion Hurdle, is by no risk at all. She's jump spread through and through. If you're going over the last in the Champion Hurdle, is it going to be against Penton Hills that he's a flatbred horse and he's by motivator?
I personally don't think that's anything got to do with it. Nicky has just gone publicly and said that Pentland Hills has had fired his palate. And if you were to watch the horse, he's keen this year. Why? Because he's worried about his wind. If that horse relaxes and trusts his wind, he's a good horse. He got up the hill last year.
Yeah.
Didn't stop him last year from getting up the hill in
the
Triumph, did it?
That's the thing. So, I think people have short-term memories. Well,
it's the ruination of it all. Epitant is favoured for the Champion Hurdle, yet when she went to the Mayor's Hurdle last year, everyone says she ran below par. She didn't. She absolutely blew herself to death. She went down the... I was standing watching her going down the walkway out onto the track. She was sideways, in bits, sweating, and I thought, you win nothing today like that. she's a different mare this year. She hasn't turned a hair this year. And I'll be in the same place watching her going out for the champion hurdle. And if she walks down like I think she will this year, I will back her for it. Yeah. She's class.
She's had the Bouverdaire prep.
She's all class, she is.
So much of it depends on temperament. And if a horse can take the big atmosphere, it's everything.
And is that, so when you're looking at a horse at the sales, for example, would you take temperament into account?
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive. And I'm looking at a store. If a store's unruly and doesn't want to do his job at that age of his life, at 3 years of age, if he can't come in out of his box, do his little bit of work and back into it, his life's going to be long. And the person that buys him is going to have an even harder time. Attitude is everything. You must surely
love a relaxed horse.
Yeah.
I hate a horse at the sales too that's wound up, yeah, leaping about, like Tom says, and swishing its tail. That's the worst. A swishing tail is the worst for me.
It's not the worst. There's a horse won a point recently, and they'll probably sell him, but they'll get it hard to, because the whole way down the run, and every time the jockey hit him, phew, the tail started doing this, and I'm going on. And he was in front. So.
Yeah, I bet that's a massive, massive turn off for you guys, definitely.
If an owner says he wants a horse and then the trainer's telling him this has a bad attitude straight away, man, it's not good for anyone. Yeah. So
not even Hen can sort that out.
Well, no, you can't. It's born in them.
It's born in them, exactly.
Okay, so thank you very much for that first bit. We have asked for some involvement from our Twitter. Okay. We have a few questions for both of you. So first of all, James has written in to ask a question for both of you. What piece of advice would you give your younger self if you were starting out on your bloodstock journey again? Tom?
I think from day one, when you got an order, you were so worried about the order not being there next week that you bought a horse. The younger self would stick to what you do best, wait for the right horse, and buy the horse you want. And that's the younger advice I'd give myself, because it's different now. I can buy Neon any horse I want, but I can wait and buy it when I want it. And I have made less mistakes over the last 4 or 5 years having that attitude towards it, because I can just sit tight and wait. They're not all very good.
Yeah. Patience, one day at a time. Don't be rushed.
Very good. And the next question we have is from Libby, who asks, why isn't there more of a market for National Hunt store horses which have been broken in before the sale? Surely it could be beneficial to trainers to buy a horse who has done some conditioning work as a 2 or 3 year old.
Well, the trouble is you don't quite know who's broken them in and what they've done, and it may be detrimental to their future careers. Equally, they might have been tried before they went to the sales, two horses upsides and galloped, and one of them proves very poor. I don't like buying a horse that somebody else has broken in. I prefer to know where it's come from.
Do the work yourself.
I think it's all about reputation as well. I think this happened years ago, and I think there was a few fairly ordinary stories that came out after they'd bought the horse that was just broken and ridden, and then the stories, well, that was up the Curragh, or that was in Lambourne, or, you know, and that would make people very frightened, and that sticks in your mind. That is 20 years ago, and if they tried it again, would I buy one? Yeah, I would, as long as I knew where it had been.
Yeah. And just further to that, going back to the buying pointers, is there any way of knowing, or do you just have to trust the people who are selling the horse of how many miles that horse has done? Whether it's literally, in order to win its point, it's been running in all sorts or doing loads at home?
It's a reputation you have with the actual vendors and the consigners. Their job is to make sure that the horse knows its job to do its job, right? The ones that do too much, break them. They don't get to the races. And the good people get them to the races, they do their job, and then they tell you the best they can. And if you're doing your own homework in the background as well, you'll get there. You know, no one can hide a piece of work. So when all them horses are going away, everyone sees it. So over the period of 6 months, you hear about where they've been and what they've done. So,
all right. And we got one last question for both of you, really. Could you give us a horse to follow that's not running at Cheltenham?
I'll give the horse I bought for my brother-in-law, called Your Darling.
Oh, yeah. Weren't you quoted saying he might be as good as Best Mate?
Well, I just love his attitude, and I've always liked him. I've known him since he was quite a young horse. And sometimes you just want something, and I've always wanted him.
And where did he come from?
He came from the same place as Best Mate. And maybe I'm very superstitious. He came out of the same stable. And he'd done virtually the same as Best Mate, apart from he hadn't run, and he'd been around 3 point-to-point courses in Ireland, And he's an outstanding jumper, and he's just got the right attitude. And I just hope he goes on as well as I think he might do.
Yeah, what was he by him?
He's by Scirocco, and nobody wanted Scirocco, and now everybody wants him.
Yeah, no, Scirocco's doing so well.
I would say a horse called Make Me a Believer.
Okay, tell us about
that. He fell in Ardamel's Point of Point last year, fell three out, and I went there to buy him, and he fell, and the only thing it made him was cheaper. And I couldn't help myself. I was the only person had a little wry grin because I knew I was going to get this horse, and no one else got to see him. He is the most gorgeous presenting. He's a half brother to King Roland, a proper pedigree of a mare called Kiltearnan Rose, and he's gorgeous. He's 16-3, jet black, sexy presenting. Oh my God, he's gorgeous.
See in training.
He won first time out at Chepstow for David Pipe and Jane Gerard Pearce and Caroline Tisdale, and he will run in the next 2 or 3 weeks again. He is very, very nice.
Excited. So thank you very much to everyone for sending in your questions. Thanks to James, Libby and Josh for those. We're just going to touch again on, we obviously touched on the champion hurdle from a pedigree point of view, and in part the Gold Cup. Can we just go back to Delta Work running for you, Tom, in the Gold Cup? He's by Network. Yeah. What sort of, does his pedigree help him in the Gold Cup or help his chances?
No, his course form helps his chances. You know, pedigree's all well and good, but a horse's ability to handle Cheltenham tells more than anything in a pedigree for me. He's been there over hurdles and over fences. And arguably, if they'd been ridden a little bit different last year, it might have been a little bit different result. Maybe not. Who knows? But he is an admirable horse that could be in the first four in the Gold Cup. Yes, he could. Network frightened the death out of me when I bought him to start with, because I've seen a lot of them no good networks. Sprinter Sacker was his poster boy for a long time. And
what kind of horse does Network tend to throw?
A nice looking horse, but a lot of them weren't as good as they perhaps told you they were going to be to start with.
And did he get very sexy after Sprint Sacra?
Which Network? They all do after one horse.
Yeah.
Walk in the Park was another one after was it Duvan?
Duvan, Min.
Yeah, Min and Duvan, and then bang, off he goes. So we need to see some more of him now. So it is a bit of fashion too, and you've just got to step back from that sometimes.
And it's all getaway now.
He's the
up and coming sire. Yeah.
Do you have any strong views on the Gold Cup, Hen?
Well, I do have fairly strong views because I like a really good jumper. I'm very happy with Delta Work. I like Lost in Translation, but I also have strong views that I may be completely wrong. I think that the two horses of William Mullins are not, have a few little flaws in their jumping.
Okay, and Santini.
I don't want to be disloyal to my next-door neighbour, Nicky Henderson, but he doesn't strike me as being having quite enough fight and personality to be a Gold Cup horse.
So you got doubts about Albion Photo, even though he's last year's winner?
He's last year's winner was not without fault. I mean, he wasn't impeccable round there, and I promise you now, I've it's a great story about Albion Photo. He was trained by Emmanuel Cleo, and he went to the Breeze Ups in Arcana and they wanted 100 grand for him, and he had not got that much pedigree. And I love Buckspoon. I bought Dynamite Dollars by Buckspoon on race. I bought plenty. I love the stallion. He's got the pedigree. He's a half brother to Big Bucks. It's a proper big pedigree, the stallion. And I left him behind for 100 grand. I bid him 60, no, 100 grand. He then went for a hurdle race. He fell three out, which was 6 furlongs from home. They won 180 grand from him. I said, I'm not giving that to. And Harold and Willie went in and they listened to Emmanuel and they gave it to him. And he's ended up being Albion Photo. Wow. That said, there's a million of them stories. I'm not trying to say we should have owned them. We didn't. But there was plenty of chances to own them. And fair play to them, they got it right. But there are three or four in this now that will make him jump this year. Will make him and ask him to jump.
Yeah. It's a real race. It's a good race this year. Mm-hmm. Isn't it?
Very open race very this open. Year.
Yeah, very much. Mikey, do you have any strong feels on the Gold Cup?
Oh, not really. I don't think I'm qualified to talk about it. I'm a big Lost in Translation fan. He was disappointing the last day, but he had excuses, didn't he? So I'm willing to forgive. I think he's a gorgeous horse.
And, he's gorgeous. Could we turn that round too? He ran in Haydock to what they say was a below par Bristol Demi, and then he's gone and disappointed in the King George. Until he proves it better, he is a lovely horse, but I'm not so sure he's a Gold Cup horse.
I think you could spin it both ways. Everyone said before that race at Bristol, the mile around Haydock was just almost as good as it gets.
Sam Twiston Davis said for 3 weeks before it wasn't right.
Dynamite Dollars must have a good chance next week.
Look, if there was another 3 weeks between Newbury and Cheltenham, if you'd seen him school this morning, mother Christ, this horse. Do you know when a horse is long, Hen? Mm. But it's effortless. It looks like he's jumping out of stride. Anyone else should be going, oh, this thing just... It's effortless. It is just effortless to see him jumping. And everything seems to be longer than it should be, but it's just, oh yeah, off we go.
Were they jumping outside today on the grass?
No, in the ring. Because they've done all the grass and he just wanted to give him one last little sighter. And to see them horses school there this morning was breathtaking, it was.
Can you tell us a bit about the other horses you saw?
Clan jumped for fun. Mick Pastor, Tyne White, who I think has a massive chance in the Fred Winter. What else schooled in there?
Solo
did school. School brilliant.
We like Solo, don't we, Mikey?
Yeah. I do like Solo. I don't think he beat anything particularly, but he looked a gorgeous horse.
Hen, this is a question I want to ask you. Here we go. I think Goshen's jumping. They're making too much about it. I think he jumps brilliant. I think Jamie's asking him to slow down over the last two because he's so far clear to get him home and it looks a bit erratic. But I think once in a triumph, he's not going to have that luxury of slowing down.
I think he's a very good horse. Look at the margins he's won by.
He's top class. I think he wins the triumph. Solo and all them, they're all lovely horses, but I think Goshen is a beast.
Solo's the interesting one, isn't he? Because he's obviously jump spread and then the main protagonist in the triumph are all flatbred, aren't they? Mankind by See the Moon.
Yeah.
So does that have an effect? Does that sway your views on that
horse? Goshen's a half to Ellie Mae, who's a decent jumper. So it's not a jumps pedigree. Authorises throwing a lot of jumps horses. So
and polyglot mares.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So and they jump for fun, polyglot mares. Mm. He's more jump spread than flatbred right now.
Very nice.
Hen, is there a big difference in schooling horses to win a hurdle over 2 miles as opposed to winning a chase over 3 miles?
Not really. Probably all my schooling is I get them too high and then the trainers have to get them a bit quicker with them and get them a bit lower. If they can jump, it's easier to get them lower, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah.
But if they can't jump, then you're...
Is that the key thing to look for in a kind of a young hurdler who's, he's a nicely bred horse, looks like a lovely horse, but maybe he's quite high over his hurdles, but...
Well, you want a horse who's very quick with its feet, and if it's wrong, it can move its feet quickly in front of an obstacle.
Yeah.
And some horses have a good brain and can do this. And others, if they get a fence completely wrong or a hurdle, they get lost.
You say that, like I bought Native River from a point to point and he was only going to be placed. And it just, he was so green. And he came up the straight like Arkle. He just went, and a horse fell at the last, stood up and he just ran into it. So the kid got jocked off it. Now, he wasn't able to show his potential that day. But if you sat and just watched him throughout the whole race, he ran 4 races. Only good horses can do simple things like that. Only good horses. The one thing he done, as green as he was, he jumped.
Yeah.
Mm. My God, he jumped. He showed so much scope. And they're the horses I look for in Pine of Pines.
And when you were a jockey, presumably, that's one thing you look for when you rode one. A horse that jumped.
A horse that jumped. A horse that knew how to use his own feet.
At Racing Post Bloodstock, we've launched our annual foal gallery, a popular feature where we post photos on our social media channels of newborn foals from around the world. If you'd like to get involved, all you need to do is email the picture or video along with the pedigree, date of birth, gender and breeder to bloodstocknews@racingpost.com. Or you can post your photos and videos to our Twitter account @RPBloodstock using the hashtag RPFoalGallery. We're delighted to be joined by Richard Pugh of Tassels Cheltenham. Hi, Richard. How are you?
Hi, guys. All good. All set for the week.
Good.
Good stuff. So you got a sale next week after racing. What day is it on?
Sale is on Thursday. As you've said, it's after racing, 6:15 in the parade ring. And it's a great opportunity for people that might normally see how a sale environment works. I mean, all of these horses turn up in Cheltenham. But if you want to find out how you can go and get one, After racing, if you're not in a rush away on Thursday, I'd strongly recommend it's a great theatre watching sales, just to see how the dynamic of the sale works, and perhaps you'll see the next superstar and being knocked down to one of the owners.
Yeah, exactly. And can anyone attend? Just walk in?
Yeah, you can. For most people, I mean, it's held literally in the winner's enclosure. So for many people, they'll watch it there as if they were watching a winner coming back into that area. For others who wish to participate, they just need to make contact with us and gain access to the parade ring. If they wish to bid, they just need to make contact with any member of the Tattersalls Cheltenham staff, and we'd be more than happy to help them and give them access to the parade ring. But most people just like to look in and see what the participants are doing, what they're thinking, who's bidding, who's not, what the horse looks like, and maybe note them for the future.
Yeah, brilliant. And so can you tell us a little bit about the sale, sort of how many horses and what kind of horses you've got?
Look, these sales have grown, I suppose, over the last 15 years or thereabouts. The select sale environment began sort of about 2005 or thereabouts. So as sales go, I think it's fair to say they are in their infancy. You know, many of the other established sales are decades and longer old, but these are quite new. And what you're trying to do is source, in the weeks running up to the sale, the most elite type band of horses you can find. The Irish point-to-point market has been very useful in supplying these sales. They've had a fairly active supply run into them, and the demand for them has been quite strong. I mean, in general, not just through our sales, but Irish point-to-point just last year accounted for 32% of all of the Cheltenham Festival runners. Wow. If you exclude the Fred Winter and the Triumph, where they can't run. So they're quite a dominant supply of runners in the Cheltenham Festival. So for us, it's an obvious start point to look for. We obviously take track form, French horses, whatever is available at that given time. But our job is to source the best young horses on an upward curve at this moment in time and offer them to the market. It's very rewarding.
Richard, this is the Top Lot podcast. Do you think you could give us what you think will be the top lot next week?
I will if you ring me on Monday morning.
What's happening then?
We've a lot of point-to-pointing on the weekend before the sale, and a lot of horses will target the sale and run this weekend. The quality of Irish point-to-pointing this weekend will be, I'd suggest it'll be graded level. I mean, as I said to you there, 32% of runners at Cheltenham are coming from Irish point-to-points, and the guys know that the Cheltenham Festival sale is the place to be. So that's where they will run. I mean, give you perspective on this. Four of the first 10 lots that went through the ring last year are coming back again to run at Cheltenham. So you do get that quick turnaround of these horses, and the end user seems to like that. But many of our lots are about, you know, they're still doing their last piece of work. They're going to run at the weekend. And that's almost the buzz and the excitement of it, trying to sort your way through them at the weekend, cataloguing them on Monday, getting your message out to the market and hoping that they latch on and believe in the horses the way that you do. But thankfully, look, the results have made it that little bit easier for them to invest into the idea.
Fantastic. Thanks, Richard. Really appreciate it. Best of luck next week for a good sale, all right?
Thank you very much.
Speak soon. So to round off the first episode, we would like to ask you some quickfire questions. So we're going to alternate. So Mikey's going to ask Hen, I'm going to ask Tom. It's this or this, and answer with the first thing that comes into your head. Okay.
Sound good?
Mikey, take it away.
Store or pointer?
Pointer.
Pedigree or confirmation?
Confirmation.
Cheltenham or Aintree?
Cheltenham.
Irish or French bred?
Irish.
One horse you wish you trained?
Can't answer that one.
One horse you wish you'd bought?
Clan Desert Bowl.
Best mate or your darling?
Well, at the moment, best mate.
Delta Work or Envoy Allen?
Or Envoy Allen.
Ash or Mikey?
Mikey.
Good answer.
Love Island or ITV Racing?
Love Island.
Guys, thank you so much for that. We really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for coming on. Hope you've liked being on our first episode of Top Lot. And thank you all for tuning in. We hope you've enjoyed it. And we already look forward to welcoming you to episode 2 of Top Lot.